Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Lethal Intent by Kara Putman. If they expected silence, they hired the wrong woman. Caroline Bragg's life has never been better. She and Brandon Lancaster are taking their relationship to the next level. And she has a new dream job as legal counsel for Precursoria, a research lab that is making waves with its cutting-edge genetic therapies. The company's leukemia treatments even promise to save desperately sick kids. Kids like 11-year-old Bethany, a critically ill foster child at Brandon's foster home. When Caroline's enthusiastic boss wants to enroll Bethany in experimental trials prematurely, Caroline objects, putting her at odds with her colleagues. They claim the only goal at Precursoria is to save lives, but does someone have another agenda? Brandon faces his own crisis. As laws governing foster homes shift, he's on the brink of losing the group home he's worked so hard to build. When Caroline learns he's a Precursoria investor, it becomes legally impossible to confide in him. Will the secrets she keeps become a wedge that separates them forever? And can she save Bethany from the very treatments designed to heal her?
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm glad you joined me today. I'm talking with Kara Putman. She's the author of more than 25 legal thrillers, historical romances, and romantic suspense novels. That's when she's not practicing law or homeschooling her kids. So welcome to my show, Kara.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
So, I mean, you have a lot on your plate, and I'm impressed that you've written more than 25 books. How do you do it? Tell us your secrets.
So, actually, this is going to sound really crazy, but one of my secrets is when I decided to start writing, I gave up TV. And so I really just watch college football. And then, you know, like over the first shutdown, I binged the Marvel movies in order, but I could tell myself that that was writing research on storycraft and, you know, character arcs. But for the most part, until a couple nights ago, I'd never even watched Gilmore Girls. And so that was just the thing that when I was in law school, I allowed myself one TV show. And when I started writing, I allowed myself one TV show. And then lately, there's just not even anything. So that's one of them. You know, I just figured out what was that thing that I could kind of cut out of my life to make some space for writing. And so I think that's something that all of us have pockets of time. We just may not have taken a hard look at our calendar.
Yeah, I hear you. And I've started the last like 4 or 5 months started getting up earlier, and that was hard for me to write while everyone else was getting ready. You know, I have my door closed. I'm like, don't bother me. And I get at least, I try for an hour. Sometimes I'm lucky and I get 90 minutes. And for me, that's a lot because I was waiting for the end of the day. Oh, I'll just write when I'm done with my day. And we all know that how much of a disaster that was, right?
Yeah. So, and it really is. And everybody's a little different. So I have not been able to make that switch to getting up in the morning. It's kind of one of those aspirational goals. But the reality is, I just can't do it. And so for me, it's been that writing late at night, but not everybody can do that. So knowing what your internal rhythms are is critical. But I wish I could. I wish I could get up an hour and a half, 2 hours before everybody else. That's what my friend Trisha Guyer does. And I'm just in awe that she can be articulate at 4:30 in the morning.
Well, yeah. I don't get up quite that early, unless you think I'm something. No, I've been getting up at like 5:30 and doing my morning routine. So I'm trying to be at my computer at 7 because that's just where my brain is the freshest. I could not write at night because my brain is like, I'm done. I've always been a little bit of an early to bed girl anyway. So my kids always laugh at me at 9:30. I'm like, see you later, kids.
Yeah, that's great though. I would have said I was an early bird person, like during college and things like that, I was the person taking the 7:30 class halfway across campus and loved it. And then my husband was a night owl. And so when we got married, I was kind of forced to make that switch. And then when I started writing, I had two small children and my husband was working on a graduate degree. So I was like, well, if I write from 8:30 to 10:30, when they're in bed and he should be studying, I'm not stealing time from him. I'm not taking it mm-hmm. from the kids. But then the shift that's had to happen and has made that late night harder is I've learned when I have teenagers, it's about 10:30 is when they're like, okay, mom, let's talk. Let's connect.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, this is my writing time. And so it just has meant my writing time keeps sliding further and further back, which is not necessarily my favorite. But until I can switch like you have, that's kind of my only option. And so it is interesting how we have to be flexible and give ourselves grace as the rhythms in our family change.
Yeah, and I think that is, I mean, that's a lesson for writers and non-writers, I mean, all of us, right? I mean, if 2020 has shown us anything, it is that we have to be willing to, you know, rethink how we organize our time and how we use it. And I imagine that there's going to come a time when I'll have to change when my writing time is. But for right now, it seems to be working for me, it seems to be working for you. So, hey, that's a great... That's great.
Exactly. Well, and I think sometimes, and I think you're absolutely right, that the last year has really highlighted this, just the idea that we all can make changes. And this year just kind of forced it. And some of that's been slowing down. Some of that's been adjusting our schedule. For some people, it's been more hectic because all of a sudden their kids are home from school and they're not used to that and they're working. And so we've all had to learn how to just be more flexible, but also to really focus on what matters to us. And so for me, when I was starting to write, I decided that was a priority. And that meant I was willing to give up some extraneous things to have the time and the space to be able to write. And so I think all of us do have those places. We just have to be willing to have the willpower to say, I don't need to sit down in front of the TV for 3 hours, or I can get up at this time, or whatever that thing is for this season in our life, but being willing to make that shift and that change.
And I think that is one of the things that can be seem daunting when you're first starting out writing. You know, you may not have a contract. You may not, you just have this idea, and it can be, I think, hard to set those patterns, to make that a priority. But I think it's worth it, you know. It's worth it because these stories
absolutely
need to be told and need to get out there. So let's switch topics just a little bit because before we started recording, we were talking about accuracy in our books. And I know you are an attorney, so you have some attorney knowledge that you can use in like your legal thrillers or your romantic suspense novels, but there's a whole lot that you don't know. There's a whole lot I don't know. How do you balance that research and the writing part of it?
Yeah, it's such a great question. And I think every writer has a slightly different perspective on how much accuracy is necessary for the story. But for me, I think it's really important. And this started when I was writing World War II novels. And, you could be like, oh, it's a novel. It happened 80 years ago. Who cares how accurate it is? But to me, I decided very early that even though I would do stacks of research on where were the troops and what was happening and, you know, just what life was like, I knew that the people who are reading my novels may not actually go, oh, this is so fascinating, I want to go read the Monuments Men book by Robert Edsel. So I really made a commitment early on that I wanted my books to be so accurate that if no one ever read a nonfiction book or watched a documentary or whatever on that same topic, they were getting accurate information without it stopping the story. And I think that's the key, is often when we're doing research as novelists, we get so fascinated and excited by what we're learning that the challenge becomes, how do we put enough in so the novel's accurate and for people who have lived it, they're not stopped by the, oh, that's inaccurate. Like, I'll never forget reading a John Grisham novel, and it was one for probably 15 years ago, that was set in D.C., and there's this scene in a part of D.C. that we had lived in, and I'm like, that's not accurate. That doesn't exist. And it completely pulled me out of the story. Or there was another novel where they were talking about Virginia's governor had a second term, and I'm like, they can't. They can be one term, and then they have to walk away, and then they come back for a second term, but they can't be consecutive. And it just completely stopped me. And you might go, well, that's stupid. That's just a tiny detail. But I was like, but if you didn't get those details right that are so easy to grab a map or do a quick Google search, what else didn't you do your research on? So where that becomes really challenging is when I'm writing a book like Lethal Intent, which is so far outside my wheelhouse because it's smack dab in the middle of medical innovation. And there, I always tell people there are reasons I went to law school and not medical school. And it's the blood and the guts. And I firmly believe I was smart enough to go to medical school, but I would have spent my whole time passed out on the floor, not the kind of doctor you want. And so I found myself after Flight Risk, which had focused on how do you find truth in a fake news world and kind of the ethics of truth, wanting to really dig into how far are people willing to go to save another life. And so that was kind of like the genesis of Lethal Intent. But I also have a friend who had walked through this crazy, challenging, upside down medical experience with her oldest who had childhood leukemia. And he was a patient in several trials that had been going to Philadelphia for 6 months and then Seattle. And these were the kind of trials where if it didn't work, he's dead because it was a last resort type of treatment. Mm. And it really got me thinking about, as a mother, as a professional, you know, kind of that I'm a mom and I'm a professional. I teach full time at a world-class research university. There is all kinds of crazy things happening at Purdue all the time. And then I'm an attorney, so I'm thinking about, you know, what are the legal parameters? What are the ethical parameters? And all of that kind of came together in Lethal Intent. But I had to figure out CAR T cell research and all these crazy things. I had to figure out the FDA trial process. But then take it, I had to know it intimately and then pull it back so that it was interesting and real for people who've lived it, but not a stopper for the story.
And I think that's the goal. We don't want to have our readers stop and go, well, that's just unrealistic. Or like you were talking about, I'm a Virginia native. I live in Virginia. So I'm like, yeah, the governor can't have a second term right after the first. You know, and those kind of things matter. And they matter to readers who, when they read a book set in Washington, D.C., and they've lived there or they've been there or they know someone who lives there, they have familiarity with it, they're going to go, hey, that's just not possible. Unless the author's up front saying, hey, you know, I changed a few locations to fit my thing. I don't mind if they do that as long as they're up front about it. You know, because I know sometimes they need to have that. But yeah, it does drive me crazy. My husband will see me, I'll be reading a book and I'll be like, that can't happen. He's like, what? Well, he's talking aloud to the books like they're going to talk back to me and explain why that is wrong. But I mean, readers are not, I mean, they're intelligent people. And they may not have all that medical knowledge, but they may know someone who went through something similar and they may say, that doesn't ring true. So it is important, and it's kind of fun, too, to go down those sometimes rabbit holes and then discover all this information and stuff. And how do you you mentioned pulling back because we don't want our novels to read like a medical textbook in your case, right? So how did you find that balance between too much information and enough to keep the story flowing?
Yeah, and That's where beta readers and editors become really, really helpful. Because what I actually did with Lethal Intent on that first draft is I almost didn't put enough information in. But there was one place where there was almost a bit of a data dump. And it was that interesting balance of trying to give enough information that for people who know it, they're like, yeah, you did your research. This is accurate. I know what you're talking about. But without it becoming a snoozer, for people who are like, I just want a good story. And I want it to feel real and I want it to feel accurate. But we always, my husband and I always used to joke about like Tom Clancy's novels, which I love. But like with, the title just slipped my mind, but it's The Hunt for Red October. I don't need to know how to drive a submarine. I just need to have enough details to feel like I'm on it. And, you know, I can smell it and I can feel the close quarters and I can see the really funky lighting. But I don't need to know to push this button and then that button and then that button. And so that's where I really do rely on first readers. I rely on my macro editor, kind of the big edit developmental person to go, you know what, we actually need a little more here. Or you could sprinkle this out over several scenes instead of all in one spot. Because as the person who's done the research or who's, you know, really dug into it, I can get kind of almost overwhelmed by it. And one of the best things I did for Lethal Intent is my friend whose son had gone through all these different treatments actually set up a coffee between me, her, and her son's primary doctor. The oncologist. And so that doctor spent an hour and a half at Panera with me drawing it all out on napkins. And that's what became kind of the outline of here's when I would get lost in the details, I keep going back to what Dr. Jody had sketched out and be like, okay, here's the way the university professor in oncology described it. And so it's like I was a parent who was getting the introduction. If I kept coming back to that kind of simplicity of here's the big picture, here's just enough details, but I don't need to know how all the blood red or the blood cells break down into red and white, and then the white breaks down into T cells and these other things. I really just need kind of the big picture.
Yeah, and I think when we keep focusing on that, you're right, that can help our writing not get buried in that minutia. Because sometimes we do all this research, we're like, but I did all the research, I got to work it into the book somehow. Because I know it all, and it's just swimming around in your head. Well, thank you for that. I think that's very helpful to kind of see how important it is to not take our eyes off the broad strokes of our plots when we're even when we're talking about subjects that require a lot of research. And we are out of time, Kara. I'm sure we could talk more about that. We're going to have to say goodbye for right now. So thank you so much for being on my show.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I've been talking with Kara Putman. She's the author of more than 25 legal thrillers, historical romances, and romantic suspense novels. And please stay tuned for an excerpt from her latest book, Lethal Intent.
Now an excerpt from Lethal Intent by Kara Putman. Caroline shifted in the high-backed chair. The massive conference room table made her feel more petite than usual. Quentin Jackson, the man propelling Precursoria through its rapid growth, vibrated with energy as he studied her.
We are on the cusp of amazing developments and a transition from the lab to trials. We have a few CAR T-cell therapies in early stages now, with more in our pipeline.
She racked her mind for the importance of T-cells, and he gave a hearty laugh.
Don't worry if the science overwhelms you. We'll have you up to speed in no time. All you need to know right now is that T-cells are one of the two cells that make up white blood cells. The treatments we're working on could be the difference between life and death for young cancer patients. We need your legal expertise and quick mind to synthesize the science with the map to market.
I've overseen several court trials related to patents, which should help with that process. It had been an unforeseen aspect of her days clerking for Judge Lauren. She swallowed against the lump in her throat that still welled up when she thought about his untimely death from pneumonia. A month ago, she couldn't imagine interviewing for a job somewhere else, even if a part of her knew that she should stretch her wings.
When can you start? Today?
She felt rooted to the chair. Everything was moving so fast. Could she really transition her experience managing clerks for a judge into managing patents and contracts for a startup? While Prey Cursoria had been around for a decade as a cancer research lab, about 18 months ago, Quentin sold off its lucrative genetic testing branch to focus exclusively on the development of cutting-edge CAR T-cell therapies. Starting over that way was a bold, if risky, move. She lifted her chin and forced a smile that didn't waver. If that's what you need, first, we have a few details to work out. He laughed.
I like the way you tackle issues head on. That will be key in this role. I know how to steer the ship, and my chief scientist can navigate the research, but you'll keep us on the legal straight and narrow.
He tapped his pen against the legal pad in front of him. Then he picked up her resume and named a salary that pressed her against the chair.
There will be performance bonuses tied to the successful conclusion of trials. We want to look into stock options as well. That will be one of your assignments in conjunction with HR.
He slapped his hands on the table, and she jumped.
My enthusiasm gets away from me sometimes.
He shrugged, but never wavered as he examined her.
Let's start with a field trip. The best way for you to understand why we're doing this work and research is to show you.
30 minutes later, after a drive from Tyson's Corner to Falls Church, she was chasing Quentin down the halls of Inova Children's Hospital. If they could figure out how to bottle his energy, the company would be a huge success.
Follow me.
Quentin swiped a card in the reader next to the door to the pediatric oncology wing. He held it open for her, and she brushed past him, then waited for him to lead the way. He glanced over his shoulder as he strode down the vibrant purple and teal hall.
I want you to meet someone who brings the importance of our work into focus.
How do you have a key card? It seemed like a huge liability for the hospital, but maybe she needed to remove her risk management hat. She didn't work for the hospital, but for Prey Cursoria. He didn't slow as he approached the nurse's station.
It gives me limited access when I'm meeting with the trial team. I called ahead while you took a break.
Disinfectant couldn't hide the sense of fear and desperation that hung in the air like a heavy perfume. She felt like a voyeur as they walked past rooms where people and machines gathered around small beds. What did you want to show me?
The doctor I want you to meet is a pioneer. She had a research fellowship at the old Prey Cursoria during her summer between undergrad and medical school.
Quentin's steps quickened as if he couldn't wait to see what would happen in the next minutes.
Word is, she's having success with our trial therapies, but I like to check for myself.
He slowed as he glanced at the room numbers.
I like to be hands-on. If she's having the success I've heard, she can help us expand testing to additional research facilities, and that gets us closer to the next stage of FDA approval.
What are you hoping I'll learn? The man turned his charismatic grin on her. There was a reason he was on the city's top 10 list of eligible bachelors, but she wasn't interested.
To be an effective part of my leadership team, you need to understand the impact of the work we're doing. That'll light the passion you need for the long hours and fiscal uncertainty. Also, at times, you'll need to answer questions related to the process.
An average-sized woman with stylish, spiky blonde hair exited a room, and he threw his arms wide.
There she is! Anna!
The woman turned. a hand on her pregnant stomach, and a flit of a smile on her face, but a weary slump bowed her shoulders. Quentin. She accepted his hug, then moved her hands into her lab coat's pockets. Did I know you were coming today?
I set it up with your assistant.
The woman nodded. That would explain it. Haven't connected with her yet because of an emergent patient. Carolyn sensed a tension in the woman and turned on the southern charm she was known for. We can come back. Quentin started to speak, but Caroline placed a hand on his arm. We've all had times where plans change. Nothing is life or death about why we're here. The woman studied her with a hazel gaze. Then her posture relaxed. I like you. I'm Dr. Anna Johnson. She pulled her hand from her pocket and extended it to Caroline. She took the woman's hand. Caroline Bragg, the new counsel for Precursoria as of 2 hours ago, give or take. Now the woman grinned. If the trials continue the way they are now, you'll be very busy. We should do lunch so I could answer any questions you have about the protocol. She focused on Quentin. What do you need today?
I want to give Caroline a quick introduction to the real work.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.